and to be able to actually to gather together in the house of God. And we're standing here, we've just crossed over a threshold of a new year. How many of you are excited about the new year? Okay, how many just a little bit scary maybe? Okay, exciting and scary. Yeah, you know, it's been interesting as I've been reading newspaper articles. It's been interesting just to read what people are writing about the new year. And some people are saying, man, we can't wait. We're excited about this new year because 2008 was so terrible. We had an economic crash, war in Iraq. There's things that are going on that people don't like. And I read a number of newspaper articles where the people are saying, oh, we can't wait for 2009 because Obama's going to be coming in. Things are going to be different. We're excited. We can't wait to let 2008 behind and move into 2009. I don't know how many of you feel like that. I don't feel that way, actually, because I've watched God do some pretty amazing things in 2008. And I'm excited about what He's done. So we sort of stand here at the beginning of a new year, and some of us might be standing here looking at it with excitement. And I am excited too about what God might do in this coming year. What's before us? It's new territory that we've never walked in. And so it's the other thing I sort of like about a new year. I was just thinking about it even in my own life. It's a new year. I've never been in new year. It's almost like new ground that we can plow in our lives. We've been through 2008. As I look back on it, there's some things that I'm not too excited about also in 2008, but we're stepping in 2009 in totally new territory. I was thinking about it, and you've seen this too, but pictures in the snow where behind is all tracked up, but in front of you is a fresh, new coating of snow. There's no marks in it. There's no marks in 2009. Well, there is a few days here now, but for the rest of the year, we have a clean year ahead of us, a clean slate for us. The question is, what will we do? So we can stand here looking with some excitement, but also as I look at the new year, even in my own heart, there's some things that are pretty scary for me. As I look at the new year, we're entering into a period of time that we've never been in before, and I'm talking about politically and just around the world. We're entering into a time that I think is pretty uncertain for us. We don't know what the future is going to hold. It's exciting. It can be scary. But I think we're going to begin to see some changes in our nation that are going to be unsettling for us as Christians and a little bit scary. So as we stand on the edge of 2009, we might have mixed feelings here this morning. And this morning I want to talk about three things that I think we need to keep in mind as we stand on the edge of this new year, as we look at this new year. First of all, the first thing I think we need to keep in mind is that God is in control. As we look at our country, as we look at the world, like I said before, we can get just a little bit unsettled. Our country is leaving its moorings, has left its moorings, is beginning to move away from the moorings that we've been founded on. That's a little unsettling to me. The foundation that we have been founded on as a country, we are now leaving rapidly. And in the last number of years, you've seen a steady downhill decline in our country. We're leaving our moorings. We're leaving our foundation. We don't have the basis that we had before. We can no longer be called a Christian nation, really. We're a post-Christian nation. We are not a Christian nation anymore. That's a little unsettling to me. World powers are shifting. We used to be the big king on the block as United States. We're still there, but the powers are shifting rapidly. We're no longer the world power. There's other powers that are coming in and rapidly taking our place. We're still there, but we're beginning to see world powers begin to shift as we look around us. The financial stability that we knew in this country, and actually a lot of people around the world, has been shaken in this past year. I don't think we'll be able to see and count on what has happened in the last years financially since about the 80s until now. I don't think we'll be able to count on that in the next number of years anyway. Shaken as well. Our rulers are changing. The rulers around the world are changing, and people are getting into power that we're looking at and saying, man, this is unsettling because of the people that are gaining power. And actually, we talked about it a little bit. Doug mentioned beforehand just about what's happening in Israel. And that before church we were talking about a little bit, but that can be unshaking for us. The whole world is watching right now what's happening in Israel. That's how key it is. And what's taking place there in the Gaza Strip. And around the world, people are watching and saying, what's going to happen here? All eyes are focused on that. And that can be very unsettling, especially as we think of end times drawing pretty near. I've been reading a number of books just about the end time. One is David Jeremiah's What in the World is Going On? And it's pretty unsettling when you begin to look at some of the things that could happen in our future. We have a new president that's going to be coming into office in a number of days, and I look at what his agenda is and what his platform is. It can be very unsettling for me, because what he has in mind and what he's pushing for, and I say this with all respect to him as the president, as our future president, but as I look at what his agenda is and what his platform is and what his goal is for the first 90 days in office, it's pretty unsettling, because it comes pretty close to home because I'm a preacher. But what I say in the pulpit, I may go to prison for if he gets through the first 90 days what he wants to get through in the first 90 days. I will have to be very careful in what I say, or I will end up in prison for. So it comes pretty close to home when those kind of things start happening. And we look at that and we say, man, what in the world is going on? Like, what's happening in our country? What's happening in our world? What's happening around us? And we can look at that and we can have a number of responses. We can be controlled by fear, and we can go into a fear mold and just sort of live our lives based on fear. We can go into a control mode where we try to control our surroundings and get things back the way they used to be. And we may think, you know, we have to do something and change things. We have to change what's going on. There's one thing I liked. I'm not sure who prayed it Wednesday evening at our New Year's Eve party, but we had a time of prayer and someone prayed. I think it might have been Bethany Furman. I couldn't see who it was that was praying, but I can't quote what she said word for word, but said something like this: you know, there's a reason Obama's in office, and that Obama was put in office. There must be a reason, and help us be okay with that. And I was actually taken aback a little bit by that prayer, but the more I thought about it, the more I liked it, and the more I believe that's right on. And one of my philosophies for what's happening right now in our country and around the world: if we believe that God is in control, which all of us in our heads, we would say that. We would stand here and say, yeah, God is in control. But how many of us actually believe that with our hearts and actually live our lives in a way that we believe that God is in control? And so the real question is for us as a country right now and as Christians is not what can we do to change what's happening? How can we pass more legislation? How can we do all these kind of things for us to get back to where we were as a country? That's not the real issue. The real issue is, do we understand that God is up to something? He has not lost control of what's happening. He has not lost control of what's going on. In fact, 1 Samuel 2:7 says, the Lord makes poor and he makes rich. Even the financial situations we're going through right now, God is up to something in that. He brings low and he lifts up. There's certain people that he tears down. There's other people that he lifts up. Psalm 75:7 says, "But God is a judge. He puts down one, he exalts another." Proverbs 21:1, "The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord like the rivers of water. He turns it wherever he wishes." God hasn't lost control in what's happened as far as who is appointed as leader of our country. God hasn't lost control. We may think that, we may feel that, and we may wring our hands and say, "What in the world is going on?" But God has not lost control. Daniel 2:21, "He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who are understanding." You know, my take on things is this: our country is not where I would like to see it be. I don't like to see where our country is headed. It's unsettling to me. I don't like the fact that we're no longer a Christian nation as a whole, and we've left those foundations. I don't like it. But the truth is, God is up to something. And the real question is, God, what are you up to? In what we see taking place in our nation, in what we see taking place around the world, God, what are you up to? And then our prayer needs to be, God, help me not to miss what you are up to. Because we can miss it in a heartbeat. We can miss what God is doing. We're so consumed by the unsettledness of our world. We can be consumed by fear and controlling our world and all those kind of things. But the question is not that I have to change it, although I'm okay with that. I wish our laws would reflect Christian values and Christian things. I'm okay with those kind of things, but that's not our main focus. Our main focus has to be, God, what are you up to? And help me not to miss what you are up to. Because that's going to determine how we live our lives. If we can catch a hold of what God's up to, if God's moving us toward the end times right now rapidly, we want to be aware of that. We don't want to hold it back. We want to be prepared for it. But the truth is, as we enter into this year, God is in control. He has not lost control of what's happening in our country or around the world. He is in control, and He will stay in control. It's important that we keep that in mind. The second thing that I think is important for us to keep in mind in 2009 is the things of this world are not that important. They're really not. The things of this world that we get wrapped up in, and it can be a number of things. It can be our peers. It can be our houses. It can be our cars. It can be our jobs. It can be the latest tech gadget, if you're into techie things. It can be the latest decorations, the latest fashions. The list goes on and on. The truth is, those kind of things are not that important. And I like Psalm 73. I'm just going to read a few verses from it. David says this, starting in verse 2, it says, "But as for me," let me say this. Those things, the things that I just mentioned, have a way of pulling our focus away from what really matters in life. We get caught up into these things and it pulls our focus away from what really matters in life. And David had a grasp on that in Psalm 73. He says, as he looked around and saw the prosperity of the wicked, he says this, "But as for me, my feet almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there were no pangs in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble like other men, nor are they plagued like other men." Verse 7, "Their eyes bulge with abundance. They have more than heart could wish. They scoff and speak wickedly concerning their oppression. They speak loftily." In verse 12, "Behold, these are ungodly who are always at ease. They increase in riches. Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence. For all day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning." And you get the picture of David focusing on these things, and he gets his attention off of what really matters. And then in 17, he comes back to it and says, "Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understand." And you get the picture of David looking at all these things and the importance of him, and he gets his focus off of where it needed to be. But then he finally comes back around and realizes that the things of this world are not that important. Here's a couple verses specifically for you as young people. In Ecclesiastes, it says this, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth." And then he says this, "Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes." In other words, what he's saying is rejoice in the fact that you're young, you have your life before you, you're going to be drawn away by certain things. And that's sort of, Solomon comes back and says, walk in it, go ahead. And there's a little bit of sarcasm here, I think, as Solomon comes across. He says, go ahead and walk in it. Go ahead and be a youth. Go ahead and be a young person and live your life that way. Live your heart, live your life however your heart pleases, is what he's saying. But then he comes back and says this, but know this. But know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. And there's a little bit of sarcasm in what he's bringing out there. He said, rejoice in the fact that you're young and that you have your life before me. And he said, go and live according to your heart's content. But be aware of this, there's something greater than all the things you're going to be pulled after as a young person. There's something greater. You're going to face judgment for everything that you do in your life. And one day you will face that judgment. And what he's really doing is pulling us back to, hey, there's something more important than the things that I get sidetracked by in my lives. And Solomon really, really is bringing that point home. Go ahead and live your life that way, but you will face judgment for it. There's something greater, there's something more important than how we want to live our lives. You know, and sometimes circumstances have a way of bringing that point closer home to us as people. A couple weeks ago, my wife's nephew was taking his girlfriend home from a Christmas get-together. He tried to go some back roads, couldn't make it because of the ice, so he turned around and came down the hill. He was going about 5-10 mile an hour, very slow. It was extremely icy. Came down the hill, his car, the road turned and crossed a bridge across the river. He started sliding at about 5 or 10 mile an hour. The snow plow had come and plowed it and actually created, the way he'd plowed the road created a ramp for him. And about 5 to 10 mile an hour, they slid down the hill. Instead of hitting the guardrail, they hit the snowbank, which launched them out over. And they all of a sudden, their car's ending up in a river. And normally, the river's about a foot to a foot and a half deep, right where their car ended up. Well, where it went down in, it actually sort of looks like the Grand Canyon. It's about 20 feet of just rock on both sides. They went down over that. All of a sudden, they're in the river, and it's about 10 feet deep. It's about 8 degrees out, and the wind is blowing extremely hard. And all of a sudden, they're swimming for their lives. And by the time they got, they were able to get out through the sunroof, swim to the bank. And by the time they got up the sides of the bank, there's actually blood. She lost her shoes in the course of the accident. They came head first down, hit a rock, flipped over. When they hit the water, it flipped them again so that they landed on the water wheels first. But in all that, she lost her shoes. So till they finally were able to claw their way up these rocks to the top, there's blood all the way up the side. By the time they get to the top, their clothes are frozen stiff already. It's 8 degrees, it's windy. The thing that's going through their minds is, I'm dying. I'm dying. They get up on the bank. They made it that far. The nearest house is a mile and a half away. It's 8 degrees. The wind's blowing. She's walking barefooted on icy roads a mile and a half. And she's saying all the way, just let me stop. Let me die. He thinks this is going to be the end of his life. And But he says, no, we got to keep going. We got to keep going. We got to keep going. So they walk a mile and a half. It's a miracle they're alive. They made it. It's an absolute miracle that they're alive. It's soaking wet, 8 degrees, wind blowing, a mile and a half. But when you're standing on the edge of eternity like that, the things of this world come into focus pretty clear. When you're facing eternity, all the stuff that we think is so important, all the stuff that we live our lives for, all the stuff that we get wrapped up into our lives is meaningless. Because we're facing eternity. We're on the threshold of eternity. The stuff of this world is not that important. Whatever it is, whatever we think is so important, the thing to keep in mind in this coming year, it is not that important. And nothing will bring it home like standing on the threshold of eternity. As we look over, as we look into the next life, who cares about my house? Who cares about my car? Who cares about anything that we are just so desperately after, that we long for so much? Who cares? Because there's something greater, there's something more important. Which brings me to my third point that we need to keep in mind. And this is the most important thing to keep in mind for us. It's important that our names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That's the important thing. The stuff of this world is not that important. What's important is that our names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I want to read some verses out of Revelation. Revelation chapter 20. Verse 11, then I saw a great throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. In other words, as earth and heaven looked at the face of God, they fled away. What are we going to do with that? As we stand and look at the face of God, there was no place found for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and the books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. How we live our lives, what our focus is today, we are going to have to answer for, and we will be judged for. The important thing is that our names were written in the book. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead that were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his works. There's no place to hide. There will be no place to hide for us. Whether it's the sea, death, Hades, earth, whatever, they're all going to give up the dead. We're all going to stand before an almighty God and give an account for our lives. Anyone not found in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. For chapter 21, but I saw no temple, and it is talking about heaven and the beauty of it. For the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city had no need of the sun or of the moon to shine it, for the glory of God illuminated it. The Lamb is its light. And the nations of those who were saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of earth bring their glory and honor into it. The gates shall not be shut at all by day. There will be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. But there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And we look at that, I don't have to preach long about that. We know the things that defile, that cause an abomination, and the whole lying piece we know. But if you have any questions on that, look across to chapter 15 of verse 22. It says, "But outside are dogs." In other words, I looked that up, and a lot of times we refer to the sexual passions of men, especially in that. But really, it's talking about, and that's some of what it's talking about, but it's talking about living like animals. We have no care for anything. We just live our lives exactly how we want to live. Sorcerers, witchcraft, rebellion, those types of things. Sexual immoral, murderers, idolaters. And that, we look at that list and we say, well, we don't fit in there. But actually, the idolaters, I fit in that category. Because that is really anything that I put ahead of God makes me an idolater. If I put something ahead of God, whether it's my friends, whatever it is, and that hits pretty home, pretty close home for me. Because I have a tendency, and I think we all do, I think we can be honest with each other here this morning, that we have a tendency to put things ahead of God in our lives. And if we do that, we're an idolater. And whoever loves and practices a lie, those are the people that will not be in the Lamb's Book of Life. Someone has said this, there's three types of believers. There's a believer, there's a non-believer, and then there's a make-believer. And really, there's only one of those that is going to have their names written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And I don't know about you, but I get sort of tired of make-believer part of what we do in church on Sunday, how we come to church Sunday mornings and make-believe. And I'm talking about myself because I have a tendency to do it as well. But we are good at just make-believing. We show up at church on Sunday morning and we worship and we might raise our hands. But you know, that's about all it goes. That doesn't cut it when we stand before an almighty God. It will not cut it. And I believe it's important for us to realize as we face this new year, as we stand looking at 2009, the most important thing we can keep our minds in our minds is that our names need to be written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That is the most important thing for us. Everything else doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Someone asked me a little while ago, we were in a conversation, and they were saying, you know, well, how, as we look at it, at the life, what should we do? You know, should we just sell everything we have and do some things? And yeah, what should we do? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that because the things of this world just seem very non-important as I look at eternity. They do. But in the other side, we have to keep on living. But the question is, are our names written in the Lamb's Book of Life? Let's pray. Father, this morning, as we stand on the threshold of a new year, Father, I pray that we would be able to lay aside all the things that detract from what really matters. Lord, I pray that you would speak to our hearts this morning, the beginning of this year, if there's anything that we need to do to make sure that our name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Lord, I pray that you would speak to our hearts. This morning, I have the cross up front here. And I have it here for a reason, and I want to do an invitation this morning. Twofold. First of all, if you're here this morning, and you know that your name is not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, you know beyond a shadow of a doubt, if Jesus would come today, or if you would be standing on the edge of eternity like Starla's nephew and his girlfriend, that you would not be ready. I'd like you just to slip up front here. Grab a pen and a piece of paper, write your name down and tack it to the cross there. It's your way of saying, I want my name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Maybe there's doubts in your mind you don't know. You want to nail it there for sure as we begin this new year in 2009. I'm going to invite you to do that this morning. We'll pause just for a moment. If God's speaking to your heart, you want to make sure that your name is written. Just invite you to do that. Maybe you're here this morning, look at the new year, there's things that trouble you. Maybe it's something you're facing, something you're going through, something you're dealing with in your life. And maybe you say, God, I want you to handle this for me. Or maybe it's a way of saying, God, I release it to you, into your control, into your care. Something comes to your mind, I'd also invite you just to come up, jot it on a piece of paper, and stick it to the cross, and allow it to stay there. Allow God to be in control. Maybe it's something that you have been wrapped up in, that you realize it's taken the place of God. It's taken your focus off of God. And you'd like to just get your focus back and release it to God, I invite you to do that as well.